Chris, are you able to elaborate on what Paddy's going to do over the next couple of weeks in terms of that conditioning block and will he be out there today?
Yeah, he's doing stuff. So he's not in the category of a seriously injured player. But with the bye coming up in 2 weeks, his importance to the team and also, and this is from my perspective, I'm not normally, when it comes to injury, I'm just relaying what's been told to me from the medical staff. But when I reflect over the last couple of years, we just haven't had him firing towards the end of the season. And so if we're going to over-index on taking a bit of short-term pain to have him in the best shape possible at the end of the year, and look, that may well cost us along the way, but in my opinion, that's a better approach for us to take with him. So given there's 2 games before the bye, we can use that extra week, which is probably more than he needs in reality. We think that's going to have him in the best shape to have a really good run at the last couple of months of the season. So to answer your question, what will he do? He'll be able to do quite a significant amount of work. And a big portion of the issue right at the moment with Pat is that almost from the first round, he hasn't been able to train much. He's just had a series of issues that have stopped him training without necessarily stopping him from playing. And we've just come to that point now where we're not going to take the risk that if we just keep muddling along, he's going to be less than his best. But there's no point in us, and this goes for a big portion of our team, we're not good enough to say, well, we can just sort of get through with these guys and still beat the good teams. And there's a big group of those good teams. We need our best players at their best to really compete.
So round one against Essendon, he was absolutely superb. Looked like, you know, what Paddy Dangerfield has produced over the last decade. And since then, just from the outside, looks like he hasn't had his absolute explosiveness in his game. So you're hoping, say, off the back of the bye, that's what you'll be back to.
Yeah, I think so. And it's more than hope. Like, I think what you've described and yours and others' observation is that he just hasn't quite had that power. With the issues that he's had, it makes perfect sense. So I think it also follows that it's logical without those issues that will come back. Because he's come off the back of really interrupted pre-seasons and in-season periods, really, for the last couple of years with various things. And he was up and going and flying and then just got one thing after another in the first month or so of the season. So I hope that helps explain better sort of how we've got to this point.
So how do you feel when Kane Corn says that he should lose weight? Does that annoy you or do you understand where he's coming from?
No, it was relayed to me. I haven't heard it, so I'm always careful of elaborating too much on things that I haven't heard myself. But I think I might be guessing here, but it's pretty easy to kind of put in context, at least from Kane's perspective. Kane's a marathon runner. And was an elite aerobic athlete who was a very different player to Paddy. And there is a school of thought that I respect, that as players get older, it makes it a little bit easier on their body if they get lighter as opposed to heavier. Now, the other side of that is Pat might be the most explosive player of his generation, and it didn't really affect him too much, or the weight didn't really affect him too much back then, and he's give or take the same weight now. I think it's more likely that lack of explosiveness that we're seeing is down to, you know, a series of really significant corks that probably should have kept him out for a couple of games where he convinced us he could get through. So now we've sort of put a line in the sand and said, we're not going to accept that you can just get through. We want you to play when you can get back to your best. But again, to reference Kane's point, again, I haven't heard it, but no, it doesn't frustrate or annoy me at all. I don't hear that much these days, but I do respect his opinion for the most part. I think he says some things that probably could be bucketed in the sort of sensationalist category, but I think he knows his stuff and his opinion with this stuff, I think, is whether it's worth listening to, it certainly doesn't annoy us. And I doubt it annoys Pat as well. They've had a little bit of a back and forth over the years. I think most of it's pretty light-hearted. And so that maybe from the theatrical perspective, it's a good thing. But no, again, I'll reiterate, some really smart people that I know in the industry particularly in the sports science sort of physical conditioning area, do have a theory that getting lighter as you get older helps a little bit. I suspect Tom Brady thought that as well. You only need to backpedal and throw the footy. It was a bit different. But the NFL people are going to be all over me now. I didn't mean that. That was a joke.
I don't think he's got a few for you, but just one more on Paddy.
Yeah.
He's been an absolute Iron Man warrior. He's barely missed more than five games in the season for his whole career. Does he need to temper his expectations on his own body going forward to make sure he gets the best out of himself? Because I'm sure in that last decade, he's pushed himself through all sorts of pain and different elements.
Yeah, I think that's right, but only in the specific, really narrow context of not playing through stuff that is going to mean he's less than his best. So he shouldn't temper his expectations around what his performance could be, because again, relatively recently we saw that he can be one of the top level players in the competition. That's still in his grasp. I don't think it's in his grasp to play injured and still be as good as those really high level players. Yeah, it's still a little bit to get through from the week. Once again, we're in the situation where I'm hesitant to forecast too much, because I've done that previously and sort of been proven wrong once you've had, in the last couple of sessions, always the most important during the week in assessing these things. So they're not certainties yet, but I would assume that they're likely, but that is an assumption, which is always dangerous. And then we had some really good performances at the VFL level. I mean, we are a bit thin in terms of our overall numbers. We've had a few weeks of VFL level where we haven't had many listed players play, but those who have played well. So you know them as well as I do.
Sean Higgins, can I just ask how he's tracking? Are you going to give him some time? Is that time nearly up in terms of getting ready to play AFL footy again?
No, in terms of getting back to full training and being pain-free, he's an individual case, and I shouldn't compare him to Paddy, but you can kind of draw that correlation there between more experienced players who we are just not going to ask to play when they're less than, or at least close to 100% physically. So his program's been good. He's ticking the boxes. He'll be back into full training soon, but with a bye coming up, we're not considering that we'd rush him back into AFL footy for this week or next week.
Should we embrace the hype of Toby Conway? I know we spoke about him last week, but what he produced on Sunday was pretty solid for a first up hit out. Should we, embrace what it is and, know that, one day he's going to be a very good footballer for this club?
Yeah, I think we should. You shouldn't, because you get too excited about guys who are locals who haven't played any footy yet. So you're the one that should temper your expectations, but everyone else should get excited. He's our first pick for a good reason, and that wasn't just that we are happy to have a talented, developing ruckman on our list. He earned his spot as a first-round selection and did everything through the pre-season that we could have hoped of him. Unfortunately, he just had some injury issues at the start of the season, which prevented him from playing. But I repeat myself a lot, I know, in this forum, but if we actually said we're going to hold Toby back for a year or two to make sure that when he comes and plays AFL footy in maybe year three, that he just plays uninterrupted for the next 10 years, I'd take that. And then we're not at that point. And obviously he came in, played his first VFL game and played well. But we're looking for that combination of selective AFL exposure. I'm confident that Toby will get his chance to play AFL footy relatively quickly. But we're not just going to throw him in and leave him there for years on end and have him, less resilient than he could have been otherwise.
Ollie Dempsey did a little bit different role on the weekend. Was that by design? I know, obviously, as you said, the VFL list is very VFL dominated as opposed to AFL listed players, but is it something you wanted to add to his makeup?
Yeah, we're trying to develop him into a really well-rounded player. We think he's got the attributes to play a variety of positions, and we think that's going to help him, later in his career. I think it's true of most players, even key position players. We try to develop them so that they're not, even, so Sam De Koning's a good example. So he came in as an All-Australian underage key back, and he's playing really well there now. But we could make the argument to say that some of the exposure we've given him as a ruckman and as a key forward has made him a more rounded player. So that's a little bit of the theory with Ollie as well.
Sam Goal getting closer to playing some footy. Is there a chance this
week? No, not this week, but it is a chance next week. It's been really frustrating for Sam because, and I think you would probably doubt what I say if you saw the way he's training, because he's in supreme condition and he's doing 95% of the work. There's just 5% of what he needs to do in a game that's still giving him some pain. But the medical staff, are confident that this will turn around pretty quickly. And this is more like what we expected after the surgery, I think back in November. But he just made such rapid progress that we thought I might be sort of way ahead. And maybe that was a false dawn. We should have just been a little bit more tempered in terms of our expectation. But the good news is he's running as well as he ever has, which is pretty well. So we think he'll hit the ground running when he does come in and play some footy.
There's been a bit of criticism in the media, and I know you say that you don't really pay attention to over-appreciating him in the last week. Do you find it frustrating at all, or do you have to coach in a different way to sort of cater for these, whistle-happy umpires?
Look, I'm not really sure you're right. I don't think I've felt better educated, and we've made a concerted effort over the last 4 or 5 years. You know, our ambition is not to be a club, a playing group or a coaching staff that tries to influence the rules, but one that understands the rules as well as anyone. And that's incumbent on us to make sure the players understand it. I don't listen to much footy commentary these days, but I do watch the games, and I try that helps me because I feel like I can watch it with an unbiased view. And whether you agree with people or not, when you hear what they're saying, it does influence you one way or the other. And my observation would be we're really impressed with the change in behaviour in our players. We think they're in the game more, worrying less about the umpires and trying to influence them. And I think every game is a little bit different, and it reflects the fact that if it's not the hardest game to umpire in the world, I'm not sure what is. And a bit like the business world at the moment, trying to find staff and cover for people is really hard. And it seems to be that they're a little understaffed at the moment and a little bit inconsistent as a result of that. I don't really know that for a fact. But I'd even push back a little bit in the contention that the experienced umpires are the best. That's not my observation. But it's not really something that's crossed our desk. We've talked to our players a lot about sort of what constitutes dissent and what doesn't. And again, the message has been really simple in my mind. Like, if you give the opportunity to the umpire to pay a 50 for dissent, then you shouldn't be surprised about it. You can argue the stuff at the margin, but if you give him no evidence, he won't pay it. Any of the rule changes. I mean, I thought when the stand rule came in that it was going to be really, really hard to umpire, and it was going to be even harder not to react to a player who was about to receive an overlap handball. And what we've seen is an incredible ability of players to adapt, and umpires as well. So maybe if those two cohorts can adapt, maybe the rest of us should try a bit harder to adapt as well.
So you talk about their players and coaches, footy clubs are great at getting with the program quickly. But when you see someone take a mark and there's an opposition player who's streaming back to get back into their defensive structure and they happen to run a little bit too close and get in that protected zone, those they don't feel, as a footy fan and as someone who works in the media, they don't feel like that shouldn't be worth a 50. Like, it doesn't feel like it fits into the fabric of the game. Are you able to separate yourself?
Yep. But can I just...
Should you have to?
Well, can I ask you a question? You were sort of talking about kind of the vibe. Like, you know, I don't feel like that impacted the game, so we should just say to the umpires, you just sort of back your feel. And so then we would say, well, no, we don't want to... We shouldn't be guessing what your feel is. We want to know what the rule is. So if the rule is there's a protected area of 10 metres either side of the mark and a player runs through there, without an opposition player in that same space, that should be a 50. That's clarity. Okay, so we understand that if you get one paid against you, you shouldn't be surprised. Now, where it gets a bit frustrating is umpires make mistakes, and they're being asked to watch a whole lot of things simultaneously. So then when someone does come through that area and the 50 is not paid, you say, this is horribly inconsistent, as opposed to saying, this is horribly difficult to interpret. So your suggestion, I think, is that we go back to, oh, come on, just use some common sense. I guarantee you, as soon as a mistake's made then, and the umpire says, well, I was just using my common sense, I didn't think it affected the game, the pushback would be, we're not asking for your feel. We're not asking you to coach players. We're not asking you to selectively interpret the rules. We're asking you to officiate them. And really, I think it's a truism that's existed for a long time, that kind of the less focus there is on umpires, the less we hear from them, the less you see them, the kind of the better they're probably doing. So you can see how that's a dangerous position to take, that we're asking a big cohort of umpires, all with slightly different views on what constitutes feel of the game, to ignore the rules and just overlay what you think is going to impact the game and what isn't. So I reckon that's a pathway to anarchy.
Do you think something else should be brought in, whether it's a 25-metre penalty or something for less significant?
Oh, 100%. Let's change a heap more rules. And that'll go down really well as well. Like, you can't win. Can you kind of see the, I don't want to say stupidity, but I've said it now. Like, they're just in an unwinnable position. Now, that's not for a second saying that you shouldn't get frustrated as a fan. When we're sort of locked away in the box, often your hands are tied. There's not much you can do in certain situations. So you're reduced to the level of the fan. And people say, do you get frustrated? Of course we get frustrated. But I watch games where I have no dog in the fight, and I almost never come away thinking, gee, the umpires were terrible there. But as soon as I do have a dog in the fight, every decision gets analysed, and I can't believe how incompetent they look. Now, I think that's more on me than it is on them. So we could try to fix one issue with another rule, annoy another group in the industry, and I guess it'll keep us talking about it, and it'll be good fun. But I mean, I've talked too long, so chop me off at some stage, Bianca. But Michael Lewis does this great podcast, Against the Rules, where he talks about how effectively the standard of refereeing in the NBA has improved, and improved a lot. You know, it's incontrovertible. But the perception of the job those referees are doing has gone down a lot. And I suspect it's the same in the AFL. The access we get to vision that the umpires don't get, especially live in the moment, is so much better. Everything's scrutinised more. I suspect the standard's gone up a lot. But if you ask the average fan, what's the standard of umpiring? They'd say, oh, no, it's gone down over the last 10, 20 years. Just go back and watch footy from 20 years ago. They weren't asked to do anything like what the current umpires are doing. And you say, well, why make the rules more complicated? Because it's made the game better. The 666, the stand rule, has changed the game for the better. No one who can look at it impassionately could argue against that. But it has made umpiring harder. So which one do you want? Can't believe I've spoken so long about umpires. Edit that, please.
Chris, do you pay much attention to the next fixture block? And if you did, what did you make of the 5-day gap between North Melbourne and Melbourne around 15 to 16? I know it doesn't overly concern you, but it was one that sort of raised some eyebrows. It was an interesting one.
Could you elaborate there? Because I think Melbourne have a 5-day break as well.
No, potentially they
are. Yeah. So that's my take on these things. I think much easier as a coach to say 5-day breaks are okay, harder for a player, and they should have a say in that conversation. I think it's extremely limiting for the AFL that the Players Association are saying can only have one 5-day break a year. I think there's an easy solution. I think the game time should come down, and come down a lot. And I think as a footy fan, I love footy Thursday through Monday. But for that to happen, you're going to have to put up with a few 5-day breaks. So check me if I say something that's contradictory to that. If we've got to play our part and have a couple of 5-day breaks every now and again, then we'll wear it. So if I complain about it, I expect you to bring it up. So 5-day break into the best team of the comp. The most important thing in terms of break is relativity. And If you're off a 5-day break and the opposition's off an 8-day break, that's a bit of a problem. But I'm not 100%, I'm 95% sure they've got a 5-day break too. So play on.
Can I just ask you a couple of guys just about the scene for the live? So what can I ask about Nick Stevens? Is that a new one with his foot?
No, it's not, but it's one where it's in the category again of a young player who has some sort of stress reaction in his foot that seems to be going okay, but we're going to be really, really cautious with it. So he's been quite a few weeks. It's been the same thing all the way through, but don't expect to see him before the bye. Can I just give you a little bit of an update before you go on? Oh, so Sam Simpson, I shouldn't leave out the others. Now, it's on our website. You can find it really easily. They do a better job than I do of explaining it because it comes straight from the people that actually know what they're talking about and our medical staff. But we think post-bye, we're starting to get towards that period. So in that next 2 or 3 weeks post-bye, where we get Jack Henry, Sam Metagola, Paddy Dangerfield, Jonathan Segler,
Sean Higgins,
Max Holmes, Sava Radigalia. So they'll come with a rush. There might be one or two that I've missed there, but so Sam Simpson's the harder one. And this is the, you know, this is where it's hard to be consistent when it comes to a layperson as a coach talking about a really highly technical and complex area like concussion. We can have a guy like Jed Buse who was seemingly unaffected after a couple of days or even a day, but has to miss 2 weeks in the protocol. We've got another guy like Sam who has had a bit of a history, got a knock at training, didn't seem too bad, but just hasn't recovered quickly enough. And once that continued on for a period of weeks, then it became clear that it needed to be a really, really slow and cautious program with Sam because that's where, okay, this is clearly not something that's resolved really quickly. So we're more concerned about, and I don't want to overplay this because Sam's going well, but we are more concerned as a footy club about him and where he's going to be you know, in the rest of his life than we are about him playing footy for the next couple of weeks. Now, he's running around and training and things are going well, from what I can see. But yeah, you shouldn't think that it's a bad situation if we hold him back a little bit longer. I think that just should be interpreted as we've kind of pivoted from when can we get him back into footy to we've got to make sure that he's perfectly recovered before we put him at risk.
Do we hope to see him this
year? Yeah, I mean, I can't answer that. But I mean, the overwhelming answer that I want to give is yes. Every indication is that, yeah, he'll be back and back quite quickly because it has been a really long and painfully, slowly staged recovery. But it's still got a little way to go. So if it keeps going well, I think he'll play pretty quickly. But I just again, want to caution. If he has one thing that holds him back even a little bit in our eyes, then we're going to pull the reins pretty hard.